What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Happy holiday season.
Officially. It's the holiday season.
Anyway, drinking coffee out of a Christmas mug. So I am in the holiday mood.
So cute. I love it.
But today we are going to be covering a case that I've had on my mind for a really long time. And I feel like a lot of people in the true crime community have at least heard of this girl's name. It's an unsolved disappearance case. But if I'm being honest, I didn't really know all the details of the case until I actually started researching it for this episode. Right. And it's just so frustrating because it is completely unsolved. There seems to be no real information, but there is a really big, I don't want to say conspiracy theory because I feel like that has the connotation of being like crazy.
Yeah, like out there, unfathomable, non-logical.
But. Right. And it is pretty far out there and there's not really a ton of evidence. At least authorities have not given it any real this is definitely a possibility, but
which doesn't mean anything.
yeah and it does, like, I go back and forth between it being like, okay, this really could be a possibility, to there's no way, like this is just way out there. So right. I'll talk about that, but I definitely think it like has merit and needs to be looked into more. And I do feel like this is one of those cases that can be solved because there's somebody out there that knows something. They just haven't come forward.
Are not saying anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the story of the disappearance of 12-year-old Sherry Lynn Marler. Sherry Lynn Marler was born on August 18th, 1971 to Betty and Ralph Marler. And Betty and Ralph actually ended up divorcing when Sherry was young. When Sherry was 8 years old, her mother, Betty, married a man named Ray Stringfellow. And so Ray was her stepfather, and she became really close with him, as did her, and as did, I cannot talk. She became really close with him, and then her siblings as well, I believe, were like relatively close with him. Like, they all had a good relationship.
Okay. So not like a, you know, like some connotations of the stepfather, the stepmother is like they, you know, didn't like the new person coming in, but it was like the opposite of that. Like they actually had a good relationship, which is, I have a good relationship with my stepfather, so I can relate.
Yeah, so it's great. Yeah. So Ray was a retired army sergeant and he became a farmer. So Betty, Sherry, and her two siblings moved with him to a 400-acre farm just outside of Greenville, Alabama in 1971.
Okay.
Sorry, 1979. She was born in 71.
Okay.
But, and I was trying to figure out, like, Ralph, her father, if he was still in the picture. He does come and, like, search for her, and he is investigated when she goes missing. So he's definitely not, like, completely out of the picture. But I couldn't really figure out how much time she spent with him, if any. But it seems like she spent a lot of the time at the farm and at the house with her mom and stepfather.
Okay. We all want to find better ways to break our bad habits, which is why we are excited to share today's sponsor, Fume. And Fume looks at your bad habit in a different way. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong, so instead of painful, uncomfy changes, why not just remove the bad from your habit?
That's why you should try Fume. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that uses flavored air instead of vapor. Fume is completely natural and uses no harmful chemicals, which is amazing.
So you get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is super helpful for distressing and anxiety while you're breaking that habit.
Fume offers delicious flavors like white cranberry, raspberry lemon, maple pepper, and many more. And the flavors are refreshing and not heavy like some other vapors you may have tried. Along with that, the device is extremely fun to fidget with.
Stopping something we all put off is hard, but switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Fume has served over 150,000 customers and has thousands of success stories, and there's no reason that can't be you.
Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com and use code INHUMAN to save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today.
That's tryfume.com and use code INHUMAN to save an additional 10% off your order today.
So the family grew a variety of crops on the farm, and Sherry really developed a strong passion for farming. So much so that her nickname became Little Farmer, which is just so cute.
That is so cute. Little Farmer.
So she loved farming. She wasn't really into the school thing, but she was really passionate about learning everything she could about running a farm. And she was even able to operate a plow. So, and she was like 12 years old when she disappeared. So she was able to do that before 12 years old, which is impressive.
Crazy. Yeah, that is impressive.
So she just loved doing all of that. And Betty later recalled, quote, "She was such a tomboy. We had a farm and she loved to stay out there with her stepdaddy and he would take her with him to the tractor shop and the feed store."
Okay.
Sherry is described as cheerful and friendly, and it's said that she had a great relationship with her family. And her life seemed to be great. She was happy, she was loved, and she was doing something she loved at such a young age by working on the farm. But unfortunately, that would all change in June 1984. Mm-hmm. On the morning of June 6th, 1984, Betty left for a shift at her job as a waitress at the Waffle House. And this was a typical morning. Betty left for work at 7 a.m. and Ray and Sherry did errands on the farm that morning, or chores on the farm that morning. And then Ray had some errands to run for the day. And 12-year-old Sherry wanted to go with him to run his errands. And this was not unusual. She would often go and do this.
Right.
Later, Betty said Sherry would go wherever Ray wherever he went, if he would let her.
That's cute. Little sidekick.
Yeah, exactly. And there's two different accounts of like what happened that morning. It's not really necessarily an important detail, but Ray said that Sherry was like putting on her shoes in the kitchen and was getting ready to leave. And he said to her, "Where are you going?" And she said, "With you." So that was like the
matter
one
of
account
fact.
From Ray. Yeah. And then later, Betty said that Ray was pulling out of the driveway when Sherry ran out and was like, "Hey, wait, I'm coming with you."
Okay.
So, like I said, it's not like super important in the case, like for the details of the case. But either way, she was like, "I want to come with you. I'm going to go run your errands with you."
Okay.
So Greenville was not a very big town. It was like, you know, the typical like main road with all the shops and everything going on there. Like it wasn't a huge town.
Okay.
And so one of Ray's errands was to stop at First National Bank. And Greenville, they were about 12 miles outside of Greenville. So about 12 miles into town. And Ray was had to apply to extend a loan that he had. So he had to go into the bank, and Sherry didn't want to go in because she was all like dusty and dirty from the morning chores on the farm. And she also said she was very thirsty. So Ray gave her $1 to go across the street to and buy a soda from the vending machine in front of the Chevron gas station. And like I said, small town, I'll post a picture of like this street and you can literally see the bank and the gas station. It's right across the street. It's not far at all.
Okay.
So Sherry was going to go get the soda while Ray was back, was in the bank, and then they'd meet back at his pickup truck in front of the bank afterwards. Ray last saw Sherry around 9:30 9:30 a.m. crossing the street toward the gas station right before he went into the bank. After about 15 minutes inside the bank, Ray returned to his truck, and he was surprised to see that Sherry wasn't back yet. He began looking around for her, but didn't see her, so he started to become worried. Ray then called Betty, hoping that maybe Sherry had walked to the Waffle House, and I couldn't find exactly how far it was, but it was like plausible that maybe she had gone there to visit her mom.
Right.
So Ray was like, okay, maybe this is what happened. So he went to a payphone and called the Waffle House to talk to Betty, but Betty had not seen or heard from her daughter. Ray searched for Sherry for another hour after that, but when there was still no sign of her, he reported her missing. So this was about 2 hours after he last saw her, and at 11:46 a.m., he called the Greenville Police Department to file a missing persons report for his stepdaughter. Searches for Sherry began pretty quickly. So at first, it was just her family searching, but soon officials and many in the community joined in. There were air searches done, and then law enforcement and volunteers searched the entire town of Greenville and surrounding areas on foot. So this covered hundreds of acres of land, including swamps, fields, wooded areas, and even an abandoned well nearby. But there was absolutely no sign of Sherry anywhere.
Like she just vanished into thin air.
Literally, yeah. So one of the most bizarre parts about this was that no one recalled seeing anyone unknown in town that morning. So like I said, Greenville is a small town and it was a really close-knit community. So if there was like a stranger wandering the streets, somebody would have noticed a stranger that didn't belong.
Right. Tight-knit community, not a lot of people.
Exactly. But there were no reports of an unfamiliar person and no one saw Sherry walking off or being taken or anything. Police Chief Lonzo Ingram said, quote, I have a hard time believing that she was snatched off the street by a perfect stranger in Greenville.
It happens, though.
It does. But because of this, the suspicion was quickly cast on Ray. He was the last one to see her. He was the one who reported her missing. So police immediately believed that he could have been involved in her disappearance. And they were even thinking maybe she didn't even come into town that day and the whole thing was a story because nobody had even seen her in town.
Right.
Ray was adamant, though, that he was not involved in Sherry's disappearance, and Betty agreed. Both Betty and Ray refused to take polygraph tests, which...
Yeah.
It's understandable, and I actually read in one source they were talking anecdotally about that this, and they were saying, especially in the 80s, it's like there's not a lot of other sources of evidence.
True.
So if you take a polygraph test and you fail, how that's are things going to prove you wrong? Exactly.
Right. That's. I mean, so, that's fair, but it just, I don't know, it just looks bad when people refuse.
It does. It does. And the police chief basically said something along the lines of, this is a standard thing. Why wouldn't they do it? But Ray said, quote, why should we take a polygraph test when they don't even check out the people who say they have seen Sherry? We haven't done anything we're ashamed of. We didn't do anything to prompt Sherry to run away. Betty and Ray really believed that the police's focus on them being involved hindered the investigation from the start. They were adamant that their daughter did not leave on her own accord. This was, you know, in part because they knew her, but also in part right. because they knew she was looking forward to visiting her grandmother later that day and watching her favorite TV show that night. They also believed that it was likely someone she knew that had taken her. So this is where they agreed with the police and said, well, it wasn't Ray, but we do think it was somebody that she was at least familiar with. Ray said it would be unlikely that a stranger would have been able to abduct her, saying, quote, they'd have to wrestle her down because she was rough.
Wow.
So he's basically saying, like, had somebody, like, a stranger come and, like, tried to grab her, somebody would have, like, heard the commotion.
Yeah.
She would have fought.
She would have fought like hell, yeah. Well, I mean, again, yes, but things happen. It's not always so black and white, you know?
True. But that's why they all kind of believe that it was somebody she was at least familiar with who maybe was like, oh, come look at this, or like, I want to show you this. And she was familiar enough that she wasn't like immediately like fighting or running away.
Right.
It didn't take long for several witnesses to call in tips detailing a girl that they believe to be Sherry with an older man. So this man was described as about 50 years old, about 5'8", with a, quote, weathered complexion. There were several sightings of Sherry and this man, and the all of the different sightings described the man in the same way, and they all described Sherry as being visibly distressed, looking disheveled, and dazed. One of the most promising reports was when Sherry and the man were spotted at a truck stop in Conley, Georgia, which is about 250 miles north of Greenville. And the witness who saw them there said that the girl referred to the man as BJ.
Okay.
But unfortunately, none of these sightings of Sherry and the man were ever definitively confirmed. And while they were all looked into, none of them did anything to advance the investigation. Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. While Ray was suspected by police and many in the community, Betty has always believed that he is innocent. All of Sherry's family, including her biological father, Ralph, and reportedly Ray, were investigated and officially ruled out as suspects. I'll talk about this a little bit later, but some sources say Ray was ruled out, but then there's a quote from the police from 2013 that kind of talks differently about it, but so I don't know if he was ever like officially ruled out. But right. The rest of the family was all ruled out as suspects. Sherry's case went cold, and no one knew what happened to the young girl. It was as if she vanished into thin air. In 1986, 2 years after Sherry's disappearance, her story was featured on national TV on a show called Missing 3, Have You Seen This Person? And this led to several tips coming in from all around the country. So tips included sightings of Sherry at a Sammy's Go-Go Lounge in Birmingham, Alabama, at a truck stop in Dubuque, Iowa, and along Interstate 65 in several areas, including in Alabama, Tennessee, and Mississippi. One tip from Boston was someone that recognized the man in the composite sketch of the person believed to have been seen with Sherry. But again, that original sighting was never confirmed, and that tip never led anywhere, and none of these sightings were ever confirmed or led anywhere.
Ugh, I hate that. When there's like tips that come in and they seem so promising and then they just die. They just
fizzle
literally
out.
Fizzle out.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, Sherry's like unique in her own way, she's also like a young girl. And so I feel like it's very easy for people to be like, "Ooh, that looks suspicious. That little girl could be Sherry." You know, it's hard.
It is.
Now, this is when we're going to get into this theory. And this all comes from a resident of Greenville named Ryan Anderson, who runs a Facebook page called Sherry Lynn Marler Still Missing. And Ryan has done a lot of investigating into Sherry's disappearance. And through her investigation, she got to know Betty and Larry, Sherry's brother. So she's done a lot. And in 2019, she posted her theory to the Facebook page. So I'm going to go through this, but just know from the start that none of this has been confirmed by authorities. And okay. I couldn't even find how much it's been like properly investigated.
Okay.
But it is an interesting theory. So we're going to go through all of it.
Okay.
So Ryan believes that Sherry was the victim of a, quote, multiple family-based incest pedophilia ring that involves people from Butler and Crenshaw counties. And for reference, Greenville is located in Butler County.
Okay, that sounds awful.
Yeah. So she believes that Sherry was kidnapped by someone she knew, which would explain why she didn't have to put up a fight.
Right.
And she also believes Ray was not involved. I'm going to read to you from the post that Ryan shared on November 25th, 2019, because I feel like the easiest way to just understand everything is just to read the post.
Okay.
We believe Sherry Marler was murdered and dismembered by someone she knew very well, not her stepfather, and thrown into a hog pen in Butler County. We believe the person who murdered her is deceased. We strongly suspect there were one or two other people there at the time of her death and that they are also deceased. We strongly suspect she was pregnant at the time.
What?
Yeah. And then they said, we believe that quote I said earlier, she's a victim of multiple family-based incest pedophilia ring. They go on to say, or the post goes on to say, we have documented video footage of working with two separate cadaver dog teams, one of which is highly and expertly trained to locate old human DNA, who gave us irrefutable confirmed hits on human remains where we have been looking for and digging all these years. In the early spring of 2017, we began digging a 10.2-acre parcel in the woods that, at the time, we strongly suspected was the location of the hog farm where Sherry was murdered. But we had to prove there was even a hog farm there in the first place because it was completely overgrown and showed no signs of the hog farm operation we had received details about from multiple sources. There was a group of us, all female. We worked so damn hard that day, each taking turns digging, moving concrete debris, chopping down sticker bushes, and constantly looking for snakes. By the end of the day, we had nothing. We are all moms, and everyone had to eventually leave to pick up kids from school and get ready to cook dinner, run errands, except for me and Becky Cobb. I had almost lost faith. Becky broke away from me and took a break to make a phone call on the nearest dirt road. So I prayed. Then my shovel hit concrete. I yelled at her, she came running, and almost 2 hours later, we had uncovered the entire perimeter of the concrete feeding pen. An old metal doorway, and after digging almost my entire arm's length down, we unearthed a pair of child's pants that had large, dark, splotchy stains. We spent the next hour digging up the entire area around it to make sure it wasn't trash runoff or part of a trash dump of old clothes. There was nothing else. We followed protocol and immediately froze them, placed them in a cooler, collected all of our info, notes, and documentation, and turned it all of it over to the Butler County Sheriff Department, who assured us it would be sent immediately to the lab, to the DNA lab in Montgomery. Months later, I found out that the pants were sitting in a corner in a storage room somewhere in the courthouse, completely rotting and disintegrating. I contacted the Greenville Police Department, who later assured me they confiscated them, sent them into the DNA lab, but nothing could be found.
Now, why is that?
Yeah. And that's kind of, I feel like, a the question conspiracy. Of like, yeah. And you know, they say they turned everything over to the police, but was nothing found because it wasn't tested, or was nothing found because nothing was found?
Yeah.
So the post goes on to say, not long after that, finally, after years of constant emailing and calling and messaging surviving family members of the person I believe murdered Sherry, I received a reply. I met with this person and begged for any information that could help us, specifically any old photos of the hog pen as it was in 1984. Several weeks later, I received another phone call from this person who graciously and courageously invited me to their home to look through an old collection of photos they had recently found in storage. The photos belonged to the spouse of the person I believe murdered Sherry. The photos were in an old cheese wheel box, and the person who gave me permission to view them had never looked through them. Long story short, I found multiple pictured, stamp dated on the back, of the hog farm in 1984. It was in a state of demolition at the time, but still functional with hogs still in it. At the bottom of the pile, I found a photo that was folded and creased over several times at the bottom left-hand corner. And the backing of the photo, where a timestamp would show, was removed / damaged. So, like, this photo was, like, tampered with.
Right.
I unfolded the corner, and time stood still. I knew exactly what I was looking at, but I am so emotionally tied to this case, I did not want to rely on myself. So I immediately and very strategically sent the photo to 6 people and asked them what it was. I gave them no information, no backstory, no clues, just the photo and the simple question of, what do you see in this photo? Each person is extremely educated and experienced and familiar with forensics. Each person immediately responded with the same answer. It is a severed human head. The whole head, not a decomposed head or a skull, on the ground below a young hog.
Oh my God.
Eyes and mouth wide open. Hair still in place on the head. We chose to sit on the photo until we could secure a cadaver dog team willing to help us. It took several months to find one willing to work outside an agency, but we found the best, and 2 different dogs gave us irrefutable, confirmed hits. We filmed everything, then we called the Butler County Sheriff Department, who immediately responded and witnessed firsthand the dog alerting again. I chose that moment to show the then current sheriff a copy of the photo on my cell phone and was immediately threatened with arrest for not turning it over sooner.
What?
I couldn't because I never took possession of the photo, and I didn't because of what happened to the pants. So she's basically saying, like, I couldn't have turned it over because I just took a photo of the photo.
Right.
And I wouldn't have wanted to because I gave you guys evidence before and nothing happened with it.
It led nowhere. Yeah. So why are you going to put yourself out there? And how dare they threaten to arrest her when she was obviously trying to compile more evidence?
Yeah. She was trying to do what she could
what
to help the case.
Doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She said, I gave them the address of the person who has possession of the photo and law enforcement and immediately traveled to confiscate it. They then informed me they sent the photo to the FBI. I've made more than several calls since May of 2018, and I've been told repeatedly that no one has ever heard of, seen, or received that photo at the FBI. I've not received one single phone call or email from any law enforcement regarding this photo or the documented confirmation of human remains where that photo was taken in 1984.
That's wild. That's absolutely wild.
Yeah. So to kind of recap all of that, because I know that was a lot, but I wanted to read directly from the post because then you kind of see like the process of
the progression
how she went through it. Yeah.
Right.
But basically, Ryan Anderson alleges that Sherry was pregnant and she was murdered. So she believes she was abducted and murdered by someone she knew and then dismembered on that pig farm.
Disgusting.
And that photo that shows a severed human head, I will say it's not super, super clear. They've like added filters to it and stuff so you, to try to like clarify it.
I'm going to look it up. And then you can
see
my better judgment.
Yeah. I will share the Facebook post on like the, and I'll send it to you here, Andrea. But I'll share that in our episode sources on our website. And on that post is the actual photo. So you can go through and like look at it and see the edited versions. I'm not going to post it because I'm just not going to post that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If people want to look it up, they can look it up on their own. But yeah.
Yeah. But basically, she claims that she found this photo from a member of Sherry's murderer's family. So she says the killer is now deceased, but that the spouse of one of the people involved had this photo.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a decomposing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like a mask, honestly.
Yeah, it does.
Like a flattened mask.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so there was all of that. And then there's another picture that Ryan shares on that post that shows a girl that is Sherry lying down with another unidentified girl. And she says that this photo was found tucked in a Bible in an abandoned trailer in Butler County. And she says that this photo was found by Sherry's brother, Larry. Mm. After she posted this, though, one commenter on Facebook claimed that she was the unidentified girl in that photo. And she said, this wasn't anything nefarious. This was taken at Sherry's home when Sherry was sick before she disappeared. I was there with my dad and this photo was taken. There's nothing like more to this photo.
Right.
Brian, towards the end of the post, said, quote, there is so much more I could write tonight, but this is what I need to expose right now. I'm tired of keeping this all a secret. There's no reason to keep any of it a secret. We have a duty as a community to find and bury this child. Mm-hmm. So I feel like she was kind of at the point where she was like, I've done all this investigation. I've turned everything that I know over to police, but nothing's being done about it. So now I'm coming publicly with all this information to try to get more attention to it.
Yeah. Light a flame under their asses, because sometimes that's what they need. I mean, you know, it is sad that cases, especially older cases like this, get kind of pushed to the wayside, but it happens. And there's, you know, there's only so many people who investigate crimes, and they typically focus on what's currently happening. All you got to do is push this out to the public, and usually it'll
spark a fire. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, all of that being said, none of her claims have been publicly verified by authorities. So nothing she has said has ever been proven by fact, as fact by officials.
Right.
And investigators have never, like, said anything about any of the findings or this having any truth or anything like that. Now, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. Doesn't mean they're not investigating it. Mm-hmm. They just haven't come out publicly with any of this.
Right.
Some people in Greenville believe that the family was involved in Sherry's disappearance and likely death. And like I said earlier, believe that she never even made it into town that morning. One anonymous resident said, quote, that little girl never made it into town or else I would have seen her. But there's no evidence that her family was involved. And as I said, they were all investigated and ruled out. Sherry's family has never given up on finding her. In 2003, Ray passed away from cancer. Before his death, he said to Betty, quote, I wish I could get out of this bed and bring her home to you. So there was no, like, deathbed confession, right. No, like, anything like that. And Betty has always believed that Ray was not involved. Sherry's brother, Larry, has worked with his mother to find his sister. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2016. But Betty has never given up. After Ray's death, Betty ended up reconnecting with Sherry's father, Ralph, and the two ended up getting engaged.
Oh, interesting.
I know.
I mean, grief does bring people together. It also tears people apart, but it does bring people together.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Ralph passed away in 2013 before he could remarry, but he was helping look for their daughter as well.
Yeah.
Betty ended up opening a restaurant in Greenville in Sherry's honor called Carlisle's on Main. And she's never given up hope on finding her daughter. She said, quote, "We want to honor her memory, but we also want to heighten people's awareness of children missing every day in this country.
Yeah.
To this day, Sherry's case remains open, and it is unsolved and classified as a non-family abduction. In 2013, Police Chief Lonzo Ingram said, quote, "The case is never far from my mind. We push hard, but it's frustrating when we can't seem to obtain some good results. When something like this happens, you try to eliminate family members first as possible suspects. That's just what we've tried to do." And then speaking about Ray, he said he was offered the opportunity to take a polygraph test, but declined. So that's why I said, even though it's been reported in some sources that Ray was ruled out as a suspect, this comment being made in 2013 makes it seem like...
Yeah, like at the least they have more questions. They have more unanswered questions that they wanted him to, you know, answer in the polygraph, but he chose not to, and that's his right.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I could definitely see it being that they are still suspicious of him. I mean, just because her mother doesn't think that he was involved doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't, but...
Yeah,
I'm not seeing really a lot. Think. Yeah, I'm not seeing a lot based it on almost what feels you like, presented that he was involved. Because it seems like he really loved her and like treated her like his own, which he doesn't necessarily mean anything, but you know.
Right. But it doesn't seem like there's any evidence to prove that he was involved. And it almost just seems like that was the easy answer because there were no other answers. There was no other evidence. So the easy thing to say was, oh, it was the stepfather.
Yeah.
And that's why he kind of got focused on. So.
Yeah. There's just no motive though. Like why would, I mean, it didn't sound like he, you know, like she was a problem child or that she, you know, got in the way or, you know, things like that. It sounded like she was a good helper and,
yeah,
you know,
she
wanted
was.
To assist them on the farm and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's just no motive, no evidence, nothing.
Yeah.
An age progressed photo of Sherry at age 50 was released in 2021 by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And today in 2023, she would be 52 years old.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
I know. When Sherry went missing, she was 12 years old. She was about 5'4" and 100 to 120 pounds. She had brown hair that was a bit longer than shoulder length and brown eyes. She had a scar on her abdomen and a scar on her upper back near her shoulder. She had both baby and adult teeth and two teeth with fillings. At the time of her disappearance, she was wearing a red long-sleeve plaid flannel shirt, faded jeans, newer gray sneakers with Velcro straps, and a watch with a black band. If you have any information about Sherry or her disappearance, you can contact the Greenville Police Department Missing Persons Unit at 334-382-3107. And the NamUs case number is 2350, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children case number is 601-811. Just because it has been almost 40 years since Sherry disappeared does not mean her family will never have answers.
Yeah.
I just feel like somebody out there knows what happened to her. Obviously the person that did it, but I think that there are other people that were involved or at least know of what happened and is just too afraid to come forward.
And this is me speculating, but it does feel like multiple people were involved in this. And sadly, I don't think that she is alive any longer. But I mean, somebody knows something. And I guarantee even if those people are no longer alive, they have told somebody else. And there are people alive who know what really happened to that young girl.
I think so, too. I absolutely think so, too.
Yeah.
It is really just so scary, though, because she just vanished into thin air. She was just gone. And there's no explanation for where she went and no evidence, no clue or anything as to where she could be.
And if she was pregnant, that could be motive. That could be motive for somebody. Like maybe she was sexually assaulted. Maybe she was raped. Mm-hmm. And they
very well could have been
got her pregnant. And then, I mean, that's DNA right there. They could have linked whoever it was to her. So
yep.
So sad. So sad.
I know. I feel like this is one of those cases that one day is going to pop up as solved when no one's expecting it. Yeah. Because it does seem like the Greenville police are investigating. You know, I know in that post, Ryan Anderson kind of said they're not investigating anything. They're not giving answers. But also, if it is, since it is an open investigation, there's probably not much they can say.
Right.
So it does seem like they're following up on any new leads that they get, but I don't know. I'm not sure what to believe about Ryan Anderson's claims and story. Like, I want to believe it because it sounds feasible and it sounds like she has evidence and she's done everything right. But I'm also like, how can you prove that that's Sherry?
Yeah, but it's like, what does she have to gain by...
That's true. That's true.
I mean, you know, I mean... Unless she just wants to be in the public eye or something, but...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, what would be her motives? Like, what would she have to gain? I mean, and it might not be Sherry. It could be somebody else, you know?
Yeah, but somebody, clearly...
I mean, it definitely looks like a person.
Ugh. Yeah, but it's hard to know for sure if authorities have looked into it, and it's hard to for us to verify based on just some photos and Facebook posts. But I'd love to hear what you guys think about that theory or what happened to Sherry from what I've shared today.
Yeah.
But Sherry was a fun, loving young girl. She was just 2 months away from her 13th birthday when she disappeared.
So sad.
She had been wishing for a new three-wheeler to ride around on. She loved Kenny Rogers music and loved to dance around the house singing along.
So cute.
I really think one day there could be answers, and I'm just sending so much love to her family, and I want to say I will continue to share about this case and talk about it because I think that it could light a fire under authorities and get it back into their minds, and I think it could be solved.
Yeah.
But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, keep it human.
Bye, guys.